Florida's top politicians respond to rumors about their political futures. Opponents of Jacksonville's HRO head to court to try to get the law overturned. And concerns over the future of Enterprise Florida. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live at 9 on the radio. Also, never miss a show. Download the WJCT app and listen anytime. We're also streaming the audio live right now on our Facebook page. You can listen that way, too. Just ahead, all of the news of the week with our Friday roundtable. Join the conversation. Call us up now at 549-2937. Then later, HGTV star Tyler Wisner. He'll be telling us about the Jack's home show. Plus, a special treat, the cast of Showboat, live in studio. All of that ahead. But first, it's Friday and time for a very busy news week to discuss as we welcome A.G. Gankarski from Florida Politics. Good morning.
Hi.
Dan Scanlon, reporter for the Florida Times Union.
Good morning.
Tim Gibbons, editor of the Jacksonville Business Journal, with us.
Good to be here.
And our own WJCT analyst, John Burr.
Good morning.
Guys, great to have you in studio. So much to discuss, from a lawsuit to overturn the city's new HRO, city council approving money for body cameras, just a couple of the headlines from the week. But our top story, rumors are flying around Jacksonville and Tallahassee right now that Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry might be on the short list to be named the state of Florida's chief financial officer. Current CFO Jeff Atwater is stepping down at the end of the legislative session later this spring to take a position at Florida Atlantic University. Now, at the same time, this week, UNF President John Delaney, former mayor of Jacksonville, announced he'll retire from the school next year. That sparked speculation about his future political moves and whether he might be eyeing one more run for office. It's a game of political musical chairs, so we want to know what you think about all of it as we kick off the roundtable with a discussion at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org or tweet at Melissa in Jax. You can weigh in on our Facebook page, too. And as we kick this off, A.G. Gankarski, let's begin with you as we listen to an exchange between you and Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry when you asked him about the rumors that he could be eyeing a statewide office.
AG, this rumor started, I assume it started because of the success that I've had, frankly, that my team has had over the last year and a half. When we set goals, we strive to achieve them and we get them done. That's a compliment not only to me, but to my team. I love this job, and I plan on being mayor of Jacksonville. I got a lot of work to do.
So you're rolling out 2018.
I don't deal in hypotheticals. I'm not pursuing anything. I'm not talking to anyone. I've got a job here to do. Don't deal in hypotheticals, but I'm the mayor of Jacksonville. Love this job, and you're going to continue to see big issues attacked and problems solved and opportunities capitalized on in Jacksonville.
He didn't say no.
He did not say no. And, he's not going to say no. There are people in his orbit who have an interest in the story moving forward. Curry connected to CFO. And we will see. Rick Scott told me this week that he doesn't even have to make a decision until after session because Jeff Atwater is still CFO until session's over. Right now, as we know, Curry's getting heat from the Christian right for his non-position on the HRO. He didn't veto it, and that has vexed members of Christian right, including the Florida Family Action Pack, which is mobilizing against Curry for CFO. So, this might be a situation where they write it out, see where it is. I think if Curry leaves midterm, it's going to be a bad look because pension will be left undone, because so many of the city's projects will be left undone. So, it's something where it might be it's nice to be asked situation, but in the end, I think there's going to be more of a boring pick who isn't interested in running for the office in 2018.
I think there was a key point that AG just said there of the there's a benefit to people in his orbit of having his name associated with that. Of
there, sure, there's a value, looks good.
Even if he doesn't get it, in some ways, even specifically if he doesn't get it.
But then he looks noble for passing it by.
It puts him in that orbit so that he's in position to run for it when it opens up.
And I think he's obviously got many things left undone. He's probably got a pretty decent relationship with the people in the city. He's gotten some things done, and I really can't – maybe this is naive. I can't see him jumping ship in midstream.
And as you mentioned, AG, John Burr, people that are upset with Mayor Curry for not spiking the updated human rights ordinance, they're threatening to mobilize against him if he seeks higher office. No indication that that would deter him. At the same time, John Delaney this week, the president of the University of North Florida, announced he's retiring from that position next year, and people are wondering about his political future as well.
I think the only job that John Delaney, and you know, this is just speculation and some talks I've had with him, but is the only job he's interested in at this point would be the president of the University of Florida. I don't think his political ambitions are alive, and I don't think he's really been politically ambitious for years. And if he had been, you know, 15 years ago, we would probably be calling Governor Delaney or Senator Delaney by now. I just don't think it interests him.
At the same time, he's commented to reporters that he might have one race left in him.
And this week there were those rumors, you know, that spiked of, is he going to run for governor? I don't know. And again, this isn't based on knowledge. This is just looking at a situation of, you wonder how close it is to a Jeb Bush sort of, you know, I was popular. I did good stuff. Of course I could be president. Where political reality has changed.
Yeah. AG.
Yeah, it's kind of where it's at. I mean, I talked to Delaney late on Monday. He had dialed it down from statewide office, which he was linked to, runs for that. People are saying AG, attorney general, or you know, governor, or whatever. He was dialing.
Wait, he's going to run for your job?
No,
he couldn't
handle my job.
Politics.
But no, I mean seriously, he was talking about running for mayor of Neptune Beach, which is really kind of dialed down, and you know, it kind of called questions to his larger narrative. Why announce a resignation a year and a half out? You know, with the payoff being running for mayor of Neptune Beach.
Well, the time frame though is interesting. That's not an atypical way for a college president to leave, where you know it gives that college search process takes a while.
And so, both the governor and Delaney have shot down speculation that Delaney is not leaving the university of his own accord. That perhaps the governor and Delaney weren't on the same page. Both are shooting that down.
I think those are two different things, though.
I know, but I just wanted to include that in the conversation.
No, but I think the not being on the same page is a different thing than not leaving on his own accord. Mm-hmm. The people I've talked to, I don't think it's not at all accurate, I don't believe, to say that Delaney was forced out. That doesn't mean that he and the governor are sitting around singing Kumbaya.
Right, but it was interesting to note how quickly they both moved to tamp that speculation down.
I mean, Delaney shot it down in the first paragraph of a statement and a couple of other places in the statement. He had a long essay they released via email to the UNF community. So if you're shooting down that speculation aggressively, you know, it raises the question, why are you shooting it down? There were a couple issues last year, the bond rating downgrade. Governor Scott didn't think that Delaney's particularly forthcoming on that. And also the performance metrics, because they were recalibrated, UNF came out dead last. That doesn't reflect UNF's academic performance, you know, as Delaney will be the first to tell you. You know, it reflects the fact that people transfer from UNF to go to UF and FSU after second year and therefore don't graduate from UNF. But, you know, these are kind of perception issues that dogged Delaney in the last year.
And his own bio on the UNF website certainly touts the financial benefits that he has brought to the campus, along with the development and the money and the incoming students. So there's certainly some money push there.
All right. Let's go to your calls right now. What do you think is in the future of some local political figures here on the First Coast? 549-2937. Kathy in Riverside. Hi, Kathy. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'd like to focus a little bit on Mayor Curry just a minute. I respect John Delaney, but Mayor Curry, when he promoted the fire and pension and pushed it out all those years, 15 years, I think, he wants to kick the can down the road, and he wants to point to Jacksonville as something that he fixed, and he did not fix it. I call it the wimpy syndrome, a hamburger today for two hamburgers years from now. And I am adamant that he not move forward and stay on the public dole. And I'll take my comment off air. Thank you.
Thanks for the call.
Yeah, she's referring to the way that the pension reform would be financed, which would be an extension of a half-cent sales tax currently used for infrastructure once it sunsets on or around 2030. It's called deferred contribution. That's what Mike Weinstein, the city CFO, called it. And you know, the idea is that there is a guaranteed revenue stream. This reassures actuaries. This reassures the bond rating companies. That's the theory, at least. So there is a there is a mechanism there. The tax is in place. It's just extending the current tax. And that's what people voted 65% for. It's currently being approved by the police, by the unions. The police union has approved it. AFSCME has approved it. And the fire union votes on it on the 13th through the 15th. So it's moving through. I think the citizen voice on it should have been last year, because that's when the referendum was.
There's also two points to keep in mind there. One is the deferred contribution idea is that pension accounting is a complicated thing. And we simplify it and talk about the idea of how much money we owe. A pension account is not a credit card statement. We owe that money for future benefits. So there's a certain amount of it's not as simple as it looks when you talk about when you need the money. The second thing, though, is I think getting back to the political reality is the idea that pension isn't over yet. And for Curry to move on to something else, there is a certain amount of needing to have an actual finish line stake in the ground.
He needs to close the loop on it. Absolutely.
I'm done. I solved this.
This is now put away and done.
That's a great springboard then to...
And to move on to CFO, I mean, that's not a very sexy, you know,
right.
position.
It's a statewide position.
Well,
it could build from that to something else.
But he had a statewide position.
Yeah, not in the public eye, though.
And, you know, it will be a negative for him to leave in midterm for all the reasons that have been stated. I just don't think CFO is a springboard for this is an ambitious, you know, relatively young man. I don't think that's the springboard.
Yeah, and the mayor and the sheriff both have been discussing of late the crime situation in town. I think that's his next hurdle. That's the next thing that he needs to work with, mm-hmm. that he says even as late as a few days ago to me that they need to work on it.
Oh, there have been rumors, I mean, honestly, since he ran for mayor, that CFO was his next step. I'm not convinced that was not simply because he's a CPA, and it makes sense. Get somebody who actually knows, you actually could be a chief financial officer.
All right, and let's go to a few more calls at 549-2937 as we talk about the top stories of the week. Rick is in Ponte Vedra this morning. Hey, Rick. Good morning.
Yes, I'd like to comment on the HRO.
Sure.
It was long overdue. Jacksonville was an embarrassment throughout the country. And as far as I'm concerned, the God Squad needs to keep its nose out of the secular business of the city of Jacksonville. And I'll take it off the air.
All right. Well, thanks for that call, Rick. And as you mentioned, AG, those opposed to the HRO say they'll mobilize against Mayor Curry if he seeks statewide office. We'll see whether or not that has any impact. At the same time, a group that fought against same-sex marriage has helped a Jacksonville man file a lawsuit to invalidate the recently passed HRO update that prohibits discrimination against LGBT citizens. Roger Ganim, a lawyer for the Orlando-based Liberty Council, says the HRO in Jacksonville was written too vaguely under Florida law, and the authors removed language required for the bill without outlining the changes it would make. After the fact, protest and lawsuit being dismissed at this time by City Hall, saying it's a done deal.
Yeah, thing you got to keep in mind with Liberty Council and Florida Family Action and all these groups is they are there to fundraise. They're there to assemble mailing lists. So, you know, they're going to whip up a controversy as much as they can. I mean, you know, Liberty Council and Florida Family Action are fighting here because this is high visibility. Regarding the lawsuit, though, I think it's in trouble because, you know, one of the things about the lawsuit is that the bill didn't specify, supposedly, you know, all the statutory changes. But if you look at state legislation, you see reference to statute number, reference to, you know, just like in the city legislation for the HRO. So, you know, it's a spurious charge and it, you know, borders on the frivolous, but you can't blame them for trying it because that's their game.
There's also a bill that's being filed in Tallahassee, a statewide bill that is seen as possibly moving to invalidate the LGBT protections in this local ordinance and other ones around in cities around the state. We'll have to follow that as well.
House Bill 17. It's by Randy Fine. There's not a Senate companion for it yet as it is, but basically it would obliterate local ordinances. It would cause the current ones to sunset in a few years. I don't know if that gets through the Senate. It's something that looks good in the House, and a lot of social conservatives are clinging to it. But getting it through the Senate's a different thing because the Senate is more urban and more moderate and more business-friendly.
Well, what's fascinating, though, is you have this mix of who's opposed and on both sides of 17. It's taking away local control, and that historically has been a Republican sort of idea. Same thing you see nationally on, you know, the war on drugs, where you have states' rights until they legalize pot, and then it's like, whoa. the idea that the conservative Florida House is in favor of limiting home rule, I just find, you know, weird.
You know, back to the caller's point about Jacksonville being a national embarrassment and the God Squad needs to get out of politics and all that. You know, I understand the HRO issue inflames a lot of people and raises really deep passions. But, you know, that kind of rhetoric, I don't think is helpful. You know, for us to move ahead as a city, we're going to have to, you know, different from people perspectives are going to have to come together and start agreeing on stuff. And throwing around words like God Squad, I mean, that's probably very highly offensive to the people he's referring to, and it doesn't lead to any type of working together type of situation.
But yet, I wondered why they were protesting across from City Hall, and then lo and behold, here comes the lawsuit. So they were just laying the groundwork for it.
And on the other hand, the groups that push for passage of this ordinance don't like being called subhuman, sinners, moral degenerates, etc. Which, as you say, the rhetoric has inflamed very raw emotions.
That's right. It's tearing this city apart mm-hmm. rather than bringing it together.
Let's go to John in San Marco. Hi, John.
Good morning, and thank you for a wonderful day.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I am in Lori Boyer's district, and I want to take a moment to thank her. I think she absolutely handled the HRO perfectly. She should be applauded for that. What's the effect on council members? If they're going to go after Curry, what's each council member going to need to do now that they've put a yes vote on this common sense ordinance?
Thanks for that question.
Well, you're going to see a lot of political mobilization from the right on these council-level races because it takes maybe $200,000 to win a council race in much of the city. And, you know, they can get this, you know, get candidates up, and you've got 8 open seats coming up. Lori Boyer's not running again. Greg Anderson's not running again, so
there's speculation she was eyeing a run for mayor.
Yeah, I mean, that could be if Lenny Curry's
if
gone in 2019.
Vacates, yeah. Yeah,
but you've got Daniel Davis at the chamber who's been waiting mm-hmm. also. So there will be a lot of competition for that. But yeah, these people can expect challenges from the right. They're going to need the chamber, the builders and contractors, all of the groups that typically bankroll candidates to back them. They may want to get some PACs going because, you know, in the HRO is going to be an issue in the 2019 campaign. It's going to be one where people have to defend their position, and it's defensible. It's like Jacksonville needed to move on. Jacksonville needed protections. The law's got very little in the way of teeth. I mean, these are things that can actually be said. But yeah, I mean, the scorched earth rhetoric that the last 5 years have seen in this city has got to end, but the 2019 campaign will probably be like the last stand for the Christian right against people who passed it.
And if you're just tuning in, we're talking about the top stories of the week with our Friday roundtable. We're going to move on and make mention of a few other headlines from the week, and we want you to join us at 549-2937. I want to briefly talk about what happened on the council this week in terms of body cameras for police. The council approved $2.7 million for the JSO to replace outdated technology and equipment and upgrade for a future body camera program. This, of course, has been a flashpoint issue for law enforcement across the country. We will be seeing JSO with body cameras.
Yes, according to what the sheriff's office announced last week in a Facebook message, they're going to hold some town meetings over the next few weeks to discuss that, to inform the public. I believe it's going to be 300 body cameras in a pilot program, which will start very soon. I'm the cop reporter, morning cop reporter at the mm-hmm. Times Union now, so I'm seeing a lot of what you will start seeing video on. The question is, will that video be available to anyone else to see? How much of that money is going to have to go into the hard drive to store what is going to be gigabytes of information that someone's going to have to look at day and night? We just heard a story on NPR this morning that there's some poor guy in Texas who has to look at everything. He says it's funny, sometimes it's boring, sometimes it's like a cop reality show. 1/1000th of that video is going to be of importance,
right,
et cetera, et cetera.
Let me also mention that the FOP, Fraternal of Order of Police President Steve Zona, told First Coast Connect this week, our position hasn't changed. We support body cameras. However, they have filed an unfair labor practice complaint with the state's Public Employees Relations Commission. A hearing will be scheduled within a week or two as they push for body cameras to be part of their collective bargaining process.
You know, what Dan said is really interesting. So there's not going to be like a level of incident that triggers look at Alford Jones' body camera for you know, February 28th or something?
What I don't understand is, does the police officer activate it when they roll up to a scene, or is that camera running for their entire shift? And that obviously, as Melissa was discussing before the show, is probably going to be part of the collective bargaining process. Mm-hmm. When do I turn it on?
Right.
And does anyone else, does my commander, does my lieutenant have to see this at the end of shift? If I have an incident where it was used, does it get released to the media? It took weeks for the security camera video at the landing to be released in the shooting of that young man.
I'm sure these questions have been answered in other cities that are ahead of us on this issue, but it seems to me that there has to be a level of incident to trigger, now we're going to review the last half hour of, you know, this officer.
For a police officer, a simple traffic stop can turn into a police-involved shooting or tragedy at one side or the other.
You never know
until it starts boiling up in your face, and at which point you're grabbing for the gun or the taser. You may not have time to tap that camera.
And that's why part of the idea of putting it in a collective bargaining. I mean, honestly, most of us are not used to that union sort of setup where you want to have all of that nailed down, in part because they deal with things like what is past practice. And if they just do something and it's not talked about, at some point it basically becomes codified. So they're trying to get ahead
of
this.
They want really clear parameters of how these cameras are going to be used, when they're on, when they're off, the protocol, everything.
Honestly, and rightly, the media will be shouting when somebody was supposed to have their camera on and they didn't. Well, let's be really clear. When are you supposed to have your camera on? Let's get that nailed down.
First. And it was interesting to hear him from the police perspective. He talked about the scenario of what if two officers are just driving in their car and one takes a call from their wife and they're discussing some private domestic matter. They don't want that on camera. It was interesting to hear that point of view. At the same time, the public's point of view is we want the police being recorded 24 hours a day, or at least some members of the public feel that way. So this is all going to have to be ironed out.
Yeah. That's a massive database to store it. They're certainly not going to want to put that on the cloud. They want to keep that inside the building, so the server's going to have to be locked in. Will 2.7 million handle the equipment and the employees for even the first 6 months of all the data storage they have to have? I don't know.
Well, JSO has been making the case for server upgrades for a long time. The body cameras are just the latest pretext for that because, I mean, their stuff was outdated the last decade, and they'll be the first people to tell you that. But, you know, it's something to watch with the union and the sheriff's office because they're not in lockstep on this. And, you know, the points that we brought up, they have to be ironed out, such as when are cameras on and so forth. I mean, people working in the private sector know that you come into work until the time you leave from work, you're on surveillance. You're being watched 24/7. You're having your keystrokes monitored on computers and so on. So, you know, people say, well, why not hold the police to that same standard? But regarding the server space, this feels like the first installment.
Mm-hmm. Chuck at the beaches. Go ahead, Chuck.
Hey, guys, if you would, I'll be very brief. Would you please touch on, would it be on detectives, i.e. something like, and I'm not exactly sure, but I think the Brenton Butler case, I think he may have been physically abused by a detective. Would it be on detectives, and would it stop stuff like what may have happened to Brenton Butler? Thank you.
Thanks for that. That was a local incident that became the subject of an Oscar-winning documentary film called Murder on a Sunday Morning involving a Jacksonville teen named Brenton Butler. That's going back some ways. But yeah, that's certainly one that received national attention. Thanks for that call on that, Chuck. I don't know if you guys remember that one or not.
Yeah. And to answer his question, I mean, the idea is that, that sort of bad behavior would be limited. Is the hope.
Okay. Let's also make note of the fact that this week, a Florida House budget panel voted against funding Enterprise Florida, as well as the state's Tourism Bureau. On Monday, we spoke with Jack's Chamber President Daniel Davis, and he talked about the fact that the chamber relies heavily on economic and business incentives from Enterprise Florida to bring jobs to the state. There's a dispute going on between the governor and House Speaker Richard Corcoran, who wants to eliminate funding for both Enterprise Florida and Visit Florida. calling them both corporate welfare. This will play out in the upcoming legislative session. The Visit Florida flap got worse when it came out that the Miami rapper Pitbull was in a Visit Florida tourism commercial that cost the state something like $1 million.
You should have him
Sexy
on your show.
Sexy beaches.
I would love to have Pitbull on this show.
Can
that
you
would be my.
To have
that would be.
On the
I know.
Show?
Can I afford it though? I don't know.
Maybe the Cash Me Outside girl.
This is part of that great shift that we've actually alluded to earlier of the changing nature of what a Republican means, where you basically have the jobs governor talking to another Republican who's upset about corporate welfare. That's a weird mix. Both of those are parts of the stream of the modern Republican Party, but they clash oddly. Visit Florida, you know, the argument against that is we don't have to advertise Florida. Public companies should do that. This will hurt Jacksonville if these ads, if this funding is cut.
Most states have tourism agencies, and they run ads on TV. Right. I mean, Florida is certainly not the only state trying to attract
California, Maine,
tourism and business by doing this type
California
of thing.
California has been pushing very heavily the past year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the Visit Florida is actually probably going to, you know, slide through and get some funding, but the real fight is going to be over the Enterprise Florida.
You know, what is Florida's main industry?
There's
Seriously.
Three. I mean, you always hear about the three-legged stool.
Agriculture,
development, tourism.
But I think most folks think tourism, the Disneys and the SeaWorlds.
No, but see, that's exactly the issue that Cochran's making is that why should the state advertise to have people come to Disney? And the argument for us in North Florida is the state's not advertising. Yes, they're going to Disney, but people going to Disney, A, pass through here, and the state's advertising things like St. Augustine. If they're not advertising St. Augustine, Georgia will be happy to advertise Savannah, and the people who would go to St. Augustine would go there.
And otherwise, the chamber president, Daniel Davis, who, as you pointed out, AG, he has other aspirations, of course, as well.
Right.
When he appeared on this program Monday, he said, look, if we don't aggressively go after these dollars and use incentives, other states like Georgia will take them away from us.
Yeah.
That's
and,
his argument.
And the mayor backs Enterprise Florida told me that last week. City councilors going to be a resolution from Aaron Bowman and Jim Love in support of Enterprise Florida. But if you look at what's happening to Florida House, it's interesting. Paul Renner, who ran for the House from here in 2014. He's now in Palm Coast. You know, he's been a point man on this whole effort against, you know, state incentive programs. The bills are split up now. Enterprise Florida's in one, Visit Florida's in the other. That makes it more palatable for, you know, people to vote on. But Rick Scott actually came through Orange Park this week. You know, he was hitting Travis Cummings hard, Orange Park representative, hitting Paul Renner hard. So Rick Scott is trying to pay back people who vote against the signature initiatives. One more thing worth mentioning, the state budget, it's going down. It's in serious trouble. This is something that Jeff Atwater didn't really want to deal with as CFO, but the next couple years for the state are going to be leaner. You're seeing legacy costs. You're seeing the end of the Obama economic boom, such as it was. And, you know, serious discussions have to be had. Corcoran wants to be governor in 2 years to do that. You know, he's got to make hay in this issue, and that's where we're at with the brinksmanship.
All right. And finally, it's our look at the strange, bizarre, and just plain ridiculous from around the state. Luckily, there is never a shortage of material. Here it is for you right now. I picked these three out just for you guys because I knew you'd find funny jokes. Only in Florida. Only in Florida does a man get arrested trying to impersonate the drummer from Nickelback. Isn't that your favorite band, AG?
Yes, I have a Nickelback
really
tattoo
like
on
them.
My back.
He has one on vinyl.
Lee Howard Koenig from Port St. Lucie.
Vinyl's best.
He was arrested Tuesday for using Nickelback drummer Daniel Adair's identity to order drum parts from Austria.
Buy American.
A band security specialist notified police about the $25,000 purchase. Investigators contacted Adair, who denied ever placing the order, but they were able to track him down through his IP address. Nickelback. All right. Yeah. Only in Florida does an argument over a $20 debt turn into a Girl Scout cookie melee. Now, you know Girl Scout cookies inspire strong passions. Well, in Flagler County, deputies arrested an 18-year-old and his 16-year-old brother after they confronted Girl Scout cookie sales girls in front of a Walmart and demanding $20 from them. When an adult at the stand said they didn't have the money, they demanded the equivalent in cookies.
Yeah, that's like one box. I mean, Girl Scout cookies are expensive.
A couple bucks a box. And so, but wait, the deal was refused, so the brothers came out swinging, hitting a man, a woman, and a teenager, knocking over the Girl Scout cookie table, and kicking and crushing the cookie boxes.
That's the worst part. That's the true tragedy.
I can't believe they did that to the Thin Mints.
Oh.
And only in Florida, and maybe only in Jacksonville, does a man get arrested for stealing a neighbor's underwear. Yes, a woman here tells police she saw a surveillance video of 56-year-old Nicolas Rojas entering her garage, and I don't know why it was kept there, but stealing her underwear from it. I have no idea how this happened, but it did in fact happen.
No, you got to read the next one. Read the next one.
Yes.
Dan, did you catch this one when you were doing your police report?
I hate to say it. We had other things to discuss this week. Yes. Oh.
Wait, so he asked if she had any lemons?
A new meeting on panty raid.
It's a big one.
Why did he want the lemons?
I don't know. All I know is that there is never a shortage of material for you guys.
You could stay in
never.
Jacksonville. And you wouldn't even have to go outside of Jacksonville.
I know. Mm-hmm. Thanks, AG, Dan Scanlon, John Burr, and Tim Gibbons. Guys, always great to have you. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Have a good weekend.
You too.
And we'll be right back.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
Hi, I'm Vince Kong, host of Redux, WJCT's weekly news magazine and the news podcast of the First Coast. Tune in to catch up on the latest local stories, plus music from our after-hours programming, anytime, anywhere. Subscribe to WJCT Redux now on your favorite podcast app.
Hi, this is Chris Thiele, inviting you to join us this weekend for a Prairie Home Companion. Along with the Royal Academy of Radio actors, Serena Brooke, Tim Russell, Sue Scott, and sound effects man Mr. Fred Newman, we have Esperanza Spalding and Dawes in the house, along with comedian Aparna Nancherla, plus the hardest working band in public radio, and Ms. Gabby Moreno. All this, my song of the week, and more. Hope you'll join us.
Saturday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
Join the Florida National Guard and WJCT on March 7th at 6 p.m. for a screening of the documentary Camp Blanding, Florida's Hidden Gem from the Beginning. This short documentary gives viewers a modern-day view of the current capabilities and history of this little-known post, and its ties to Naval Air Station Jacksonville, the Empire State Building, and German POWs. The event is free, but reservations are required. RSVP by March 3rd at 5 p.m. For more information, go to wjct.org/events.
Welcome back. Well, a new exhibit opening today in the Urban Core asks, how do you define the value of a life and how is it measured? Humanity, the Value of a Life, opens today at the Karpeles Manuscript Library Museum in Springfield. The exhibit is produced by the group The Creatives, and three of them join us now. Artist Tracy Thornton, good morning.
Hi.
UNF Associate Professor Jenny Hager.
Hello.
And her husband, UNF Sculpture Instructor Lance Vickery.
Good morning.
Jenny, let's start with you. Tell us about the Creatives and what we can see at this exhibit.
Well, the Creatives are a group that was a spinoff of the Creative Capital workshop that we did through the Cultural Council of Greater Jacksonville. And they gave artist grants for us to be a part of an entrepreneurial workshop for artists. And so a group of us decided to spin off and create an exhibition together. And we're dealing with the idea of humanity.
Tracy Thornton, your art is part of this exhibit. How does it match the theme?
Well, my thoughts about humanity probably vary just a little bit differently from others. I have a brother who's in prison at the moment, and so I think about his life on a regular basis. Even though that's not what my work concerns, it definitely informs my work as well.
Mm-hmm.
It talks more about how we should focus on coming together as opposed to the things that separate us.
And Lance Vickery, what else can people come and see? And by the way, if they've never been to the Karpeles Manuscript Library Museum, they need to go. It's an amazing place.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It's right there on the south end of Springfield, right? In between Springfield and downtown. It's a really great place. I hadn't been there in a while, and so going there yesterday and setting up was really nice. Some of the other work that is being shown there, there's going to be a video as well from Ethel. And then there are some prints and collages, I believe, and paintings.
Mm-hmm.
And Tracy, what was the one that we were talking about earlier about the material? I can't remember what she painted it on, the transparent.
Organza, that's Jane Griffo's work.
Yeah, it was. I didn't get to see it fully installed yesterday, but it looked beautiful and impressive.
So 11 artists' work featured altogether?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
And how were they chosen?
Well, this was our creative group, so everyone wanted to focus on the idea of humanity and what is the value of a human life, and we talked about that from a lot of different perspectives. So the creatives, the group of people that are showing together, all wanted to mm-hmm. address that question in their mm-hmm. work, and so this was the opportunity for us to do that.
And the reason why we chose this theme is because of what's been going on in our society right at this moment. You know, you have the Black Lives Matter movement and their focus on you know, how lives specifically aren't valued in general. And so there's that. And then you also have just a number of other things going on in our culture at the moment.
Okay, so it's opening today. People can come check it out at the Carpellas. Runs through April 27th. The creatives invite you to the opening reception tonight for Humanity, the Value of a Human Life at the Carpellas Manuscript Library. That is at 101 West 1st Street in Springfield, right where Springfield meets downtown, as you said. Lance Vickery and Jenny Hager with UNF. Artist Tracy Thornton, thanks for sharing this with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Much more still ahead. Later, the cast of Showboat, but up next, HGTV star Tyler Whistler.
On the next Fresh Air, comic Louis Anderson talks about his Emmy Award-winning performance as a woman in the FX series Baskets. He co-stars as Zach Galifianakis' mother. He'll talk about modeling his character on his own mother and drawing on some dark chapters of his own life for his stand-up comedy. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
This week, President Trump exceeded expectations and came into his own as president simply by being able to read a whole speech without once pronouncing the word heroic as heroic. I'm Peter Sagal. We'll try to exceed the expectations we've established for ourselves and ask comedian and filmmaker Jordan Peele about what it's like to actually be qualified to do what you do. Join us for Wait, Wait from NPR. Saturday mornings at 11 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Calling all artists, WJCT is celebrating 45 years on the radio, and we need your help to design the perfect anniversary t-shirt. Design should reflect what WJCT means to you or the First Coast community. The winning design will be featured on a limited edition t-shirt during our spring pledge drive. Get started now at wjct.org/45 years.
Welcome back. The Jacksonville Home Show is back this weekend at the Prime Osborne, and for the first time ever, it has expanded to the upstairs level of the convention center. That's proof that home improvement is hotter than ever. Lots of experts and some celebrities will be on hand to give you advice about designing and improving the look of your home, including Tyler Whistler, who was featured on HGTV's Design Star. You've also seen him on Good Morning America and other shows. He is a Pinterest pinfluencer. If you're a Pinterest fan, you need to know all about him and follow him. He's got some best design tips and tricks to share this weekend, and we've got a preview right now. Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
So you're going to appear tonight at the home show.
Mm-hmm.
You are so popular already. You are an eBay influencer, a content curator for Skype. You're an expert on Pinterest and featured on Mashable and lots of other websites as someone to follow. Giving some design do's and don'ts tonight at the home show. What can we look forward to?
Oh, well, you know, this is really all about those homeowners who are going to be tackling projects or think that they need to tackle projects in the future. I just want to give them a good set of foundation guidelines to follow so that they go in sort of educated, because there's a lot of money that goes into a renovation, and the last thing you want to do is spend money
and not get it back
or have to redo.
What, now, the conventional wisdom, and I've done this in my own house, is I've renovated my kitchen. Is that still good advice? Is that still where you need to start?
You know what? I actually just read something the other day that it's not paying back as much as it used to.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, no.
But you know what? Again, if you're not selling your home, then what's the big deal? If you need a new kitchen, you need a new kitchen.
Yeah.
And how, you know, awesome would that make you feel to have
sure.
that brand new space that you love?
So if it's not getting the return, what is? Where should people be putting their money?
You know, what I read, and don't quote me on any of this, but what I read, which I thought was interesting, was more sort of the internal workings of the home. So really good HVAC systems.
Hmm.
Those types,
even the plumbing, the plumbing,
just making sure that the actual
roof.
Home is
yeah.
stable, because I think a lot of people kind of go in when they purchase a place and they get turned off by a design aspect, which
uh-huh.
is kind of silly, because design is, you can change that, which I guess is the reason that they're saying that it's not as valuable as it once was. I still think it is, though.
But you are really good at that. You have a big following on Pinterest, where people love to look at design ideas and images. What attracts you to that?
Pinterest is one of the most amazing little things that has been thought up over the past couple of years. It is, for those of you who don't know, it's like an online scrapbook.
Yeah.
And it is the best way to sort of organize your thoughts, whether it's from hairstyles to like home renovation. It's an amazing tool.
And what are you most likely to pin and be attracted to? Is it decor, or is it a little bit of everything?
Oh, a little bit of everything. If you actually follow me on Pinterest, I mean, my boards kind of run the gamut, because you can get sucked into these black holes of Pinterest where you're sitting
yeah.
there for hours on end.
Just, true.
You know, for recipes that you're never going to make, but you just think, I'm just going to keep it on hand. And it's amazing.
So you have some tips that we'll share them really quickly. Do you have Pinterest wins versus epic fails that you might want to share?
Oh.
Is it too long to even go into?
There are so many Pinterest fails out there that, you know, again, it's... most of those are DIY things, and I'm not really the DIY guy, so I'm not the guy to actually inform you on things like that. Where you come to me for Pinterest is for inspiration, to really kind of wrap your head around what you might want your space to look like and really be aspirational.
And do you go in and design yourself?
So there is a board that's completely devoted to all of my stuff.
All of your designs.
And then all the rest is just sort of stuff that I love.
Stuff you like.
Because the wonderful thing about design is we inspire each other. So seeing all these other images, we get inspired to do better.
How would you describe your aesthetic, your style?
I love an underlying industrial vibe. It tends to be, people classify it as a little more masculine. I don't, but... kind of clash that with a little bit of glam. I love to throw in a little bit of sparkle and shine. There's not...
We all need more of that.
Oh,
right?
Come on. I mean,
yeah.
It's so true. You stop and you smile when you see something sparkle at you.
Well, you're going to sparkle on the stage tonight. You take the stage tonight, right? 5:00.
I do. Yep. So you should come out and see me.
That's right. Go out to the home show at the Prime Osborne in downtown Jacksonville. And HGTV's Tyler Wisner, also featured on Good Morning America, on NBC, and many other platforms. He will be on the main stage at 5:00 tonight. Design do's and don'ts. And there's a lot more going on at the home show, including lots of cooking stages, and even Food Truck Sunday is back at the food truck court. So it's going to be a fun weekend over there. Tyler, enjoy your time here in Florida, and thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. I hope to see you all there.
And in a moment, the cast of Showboat, including a little live singing in studio. That's after this.
Business environment in this country could change a lot in the next couple of years. How it's going to change, though, is the question.
Companies are dealing with uncertainty. It's like they're standing on a beach and looking at a tsunami kind of coming their way.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, the new rush of corporate strategizing, wargaming, and lobbying coming up next time on Marketplace.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Next time on Ask Me Another, actor Tim Daly talks about playing Taya Leone's husband on the CBS series Madam Secretary and how he had a recent skiing accident. Plus, we strike a pose to play a game about magazines other than Vogue, set to the tune of, you guessed it, Madonna's iconic song, Vogue. Join me, Ophira Eisenberg, for NPR's Hour of Puzzles, Word Games, and Trivia. Sundays at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
Old Man River, that old man river, he must know something, but don't say nothing. He just keeps rolling, he keeps on rolling along.
Welcome back, finally this hour, with the beloved anthem Old Man River. The Broadway and film classic Showboat is packing them in right now at the Alhambra Theater in Jacksonville. First produced back in the 20s, this groundbreaking musical set over a 40-year period on a Mississippi River showboat deals with the major social issues of that era, and many of the themes remain current today. Right now, we're so excited to welcome part of the cast of Showboat here in studio. Billy Clark Taylor in the role of Gaylord Ravenel. Good morning.
Good morning.
Annabelle Fox, who plays Magnolia Hawks.
Hello.
And Peter Jackson in the iconic role of Joe.
Good morning.
You're going to sing in a few moments, which is so exciting. But first, let me ask all of you, this is such a beloved musical. What's it like to inhabit these roles? Billy, you play Gaylord Ravenel. Tell us about him.
Well, for me, it's a privilege to be able to play Gaylord Ravenel. I feel like that role is an iconic role in musical theater. Definitely a privilege. He's such a unique character. He has a journey in the show. He starts off, you think of him as he's a river gambler. This is a bad guy, but he falls in love with Magnolia, and you see the sweet side of him.
So there's a love story in this show.
Magnolia definitely falls hard for Gaylord. It's love at first sight. You meet her when she's 16 years old, and the show spans 40 years, so obviously she goes through a lot. And their relationship has a lot of ups and downs.
Sure.
Yeah, it's an honor to play her.
And Peter, Joe, of course, has the show-stopping number, the classic Old Man River. What's it like to play Joe?
Honestly, it's a complete honor. As a black man, as a baritone, it's just a kind of a role of a lifetime for me. And Joe, I love what he adds to the story. It's just
he's a dignified, he's the moral center of the whole show.
Yes, him and Queenie. And he acts as like a Greek chorus to the action that's going on.
Right. And the themes of that era, when Showboat first came out, it was really groundbreaking for its era.
Oh, I'd definitely say so. In the first act, it touches on interracial marriage, which I'm sure at the time was, I don't know.
Taboo.
Definitely taboo.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's the first musical also to have a fully integrated cast on stage.
Yeah, in the 20s. Mm-hmm. Right. And it was sort of the first show to depart from the burlesque era. There was a narrative all the way through
exactly. With songs. The song was actually a part of the scene. It wasn't, let's have action and then take a break and have a song. It was integrated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was a big change. So we have a special treat right now as Peter Jackson is going to sing one of the songs from Showboat, the one that you probably remember, Old Man River. I'm so excited. And it's a cappella, too. So
I can believe it.
Anna Kendrick's not here, but you're here, which is even better.
Yes. All right.
All right. Here it is, Old Man River.
Old Man River, that Old Man River, he must know something, but don't say nothing. He just keeps rolling, he keeps on rolling along. He don't plant taters, he don't plant cotton, and him that plants some is soon forgotten. But Old Man River, he just keeps rolling along.
Yay! That's why you should come to the show.
Oh, you gave me chills.
We're spoiled. We get to hear it every night.
So talented, all of you.
So nice.
Billy Clark Taylor, Annabelle Fox, and Peter Jackson starring in Showboat. Get your tickets now at alhambrajacks.com. It runs through April 2nd. And I'm sure the audiences are loving this. Enjoy, guys. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much.
That's our show today. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme, composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. We love your feedback. Send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And never miss a show. Download the WJCT app and listen anytime. Up next on 1A, the weekly news roundup. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be back again at 9 a.m. Monday. Have a great weekend.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.